Live from Los Angeles, this is the Bachelor Masters. Chris, you're coming at us from a unused conference room at your work.
Well, you know, today I'm actually at my apartment. I commuted home because...
Those are his Tuesdays, Craig.
Yes, those are only my Mondays and Tuesdays. I have to stay late on other days and a little behind-the-scenes magic here for everyone. This is a Wednesday we're recording on. I can get home in time for recording.
Great. We got North Hollywood represented here, along with downtown slash East L.A. Me and Easy are argue over what the actual geographic names are.
Eastern, right. Eastern, I'll accept. But East L.A. is definitely not geography, but it's a place, right?
Live from Eastern L.A. It's the Bachelor Masters.
Eastern side.
All right. Well, we got some things to go over, including an episode of The Bachelorette and fast forward television known as The Proposal.
Oh, yeah.
Which once again proves our point that we say every podcast, which is if they just had Bachelor and Bachelorettes that older, driven, we'd all enjoy it much better because The Proposal had another older, career motivated, driven person who was fun to watch. You know, I've said this over and over, they got to get out of this incestuous picking the runner up or pool of losers to be the next Bachelor, Bachelorette.
Unbelievable.
I like the chain because then you can look at a picture of them and be like, oh, that person dated that person, kind of, you know, whatever, on TV, and now they're friends. Because you'll see a lot of crossover back and forth. It's like a giant knit of STDs. I like that. Makes it all feel a lot more cozy.
Yeah.
Feel like it's their Avengers, their version of the Avengers, where every superhero gets their little moment. You know, at some point, they got to give them a feature film. Disney strategy and all their franchise.
Wow, that's really insightful. All right, well, it's like Republicans and Democrats. All that is to say, I did enjoy watching the last 5 minutes of The Proposal after I fast-forwarded through the first 55 minutes. And they made a cute couple, I thought.
What I've been doing is I've been watching the first couple minutes where they introduced the person behind.
Yeah, you
watched
that
behind
little video with her space alien version of the contestant.
Who the person is, and then I'll fast forward through all the 10 contestants and just get to the bathing suit section. and then they pick someone, and then I'll fast forward until they basically go into the proposals.
Right.
And sometimes I'll watch the parent or the next of kin to kind of go up and interview them, because the questions can be...
Yeah,
like,
well,
they ask a sexual question.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah. They asked a sex question, which was funny. I mean, it's definitely tune out TV for me because I just don't... I'm doing so many other things I don't even have time for. But I'm not trying to sound insulting, but because they kept saying that he was controversial or something, the guy that ended up winning, I thought he was transgender.
Hmm.
By the way they kept saying he had overcome something or he was a stronger person for this or that.
Wait, crazy. So he is transgender?
Oh, no.
Making he was obese.
He was...
We're talking about the white guy.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, what was controversial?
Maybe I didn't hear the word controversial, but I heard the word, how did you overcome this? Wow, how powerful, this or that. The way something was phrased made me think that.
I think the Cape Cod thing really was a good
move. Oh my gosh. Are you serious?
You know, he just didn't jump right into the proposal. He framed it, right? You know, here's what I want to do. I want to introduce you to my parents and go to a place that's meaningful to me, and then I'll propose with this ring. I don't know. Had a good sense about it.
Where are they now?
Well, they showed that stupid little picture after when they roll the credits, and then they roll the images of the production companies. Did you see that part right at the very end? After all that, they show a little picture.
My DVR stops the thing.
Oh. Yeah, they showed some picture of them. It was like a selfie they took in Cape Cod. So... All right, well, shifting gears a little bit, we have some Bachelor Masters data analysis. I'm going to geek out here, which means we'll probably lose listeners.
But maybe gain some, too.
Yeah.
Those data geeks that haven't been tuning in, we can broadcast that and say, we've got the data now.
Yeah,
come
I can
back.
Put it on Reddit's Data is Beautiful subreddit. You know, the Stephen Hawking, when he wrote his book, Brief History of Time, his publishers told him, don't put in any scientific diagrams or math equations because the book will flop. But he ended up putting some in, and then the book was a runaway bestseller, of course. So I'm hoping the same thing is true here. Launch the Bachelor Masters from a fledgling non-corporate non-network podcast to a slightly less fledgling non-corporate non-network podcast. You ready?
Yes.
I'm ready.
I can tell the excitement in your voices. So here's what I did. I transcribed all of our podcast episodes from this season, from Becca's season. And I did that using YouTube's caption auto generator, which actually works really well. And then I combined all of the transcripts into one giant text blob. And then I put that into a word frequency generator. So it lists all the words we've said this season on our podcast in order of how many times we said them. So I'm going to say the top five words that we have said during Becca's season. Is that great or what?
Yeah.
It's pretty sweet. What we need is sweet in the top five?
Probably. Well,
I've never said that, Chris.
What we need is a drop from The Price is Right. You know, like Drew Carey will say, all right, are you guys ready to go? And then the whole crowd will go nuts. We don't have that right now. So it makes this sound really uninteresting.
Well, we have the B-roll of you and ECR in the audience, and we should use some of that audio over and over. We should reuse the audio the way they use that in the proposal. Yeah. Applause every time we say something. We should have some reaction sounds when we get into arguments.
That's great. I love that. We should make a YouTube video. Maybe that should be our 2019 promo, where we're going around talking about things and then we cut in the footage of us reacting during the proposal. Okay, here we go. So I removed, obviously, a bunch of the words that come up, like I, V, that, and. These are just the meaty words, so it's kind of subjective. Like, but. But is obviously not a word I included, but. Some of them actually have substance. All right, I'm going to do this like the proposal. The first word that I'd like to get to know better is think.
Oh, think in its finest beachwear.
We said it 741 times this season.
Wow. Is that number five out of... So you're doing 5-1. I see.
No, was number one. This was one.
Well, we try to do that a lot.
We think we're a thinking man, thinking person's podcast. We try to think.
Yeah.
I don't know if podcasts
say think a lot.
You know, like, well, there's a lot of podcasts where they talk very fast and they're funny. You know, they're funny or they're not funny or whatever. But I think dead air can be good if it means you're thinking.
Now that we're actually thinking about the word thought, it's important to kind of realize that it's not just the word for itself, but sometimes it's because we're arguing. And we're trying to get our point across, but we don't want to say you're wrong. We want to say I think this.
You don't want to say someone's wrong. You want to say your view and hope that it persuades.
Right. And it's a better word, I think, than believe in any, and if that's worth anything.
So you think that think is better than believe?
Yes.
But I believe that
believe it's better.
Is the best word of all, because we are big Justin Bieber fans here. I'm speaking for all three of us. He's one of my favorite Canadians.
As a general rule, I never use the word believe because beliefs start wars. So I very rarely say I believe something. If you say believe, it means that you're unwilling to change.
Right, but also that kind of sentiment of like a simple way of understanding something is also where the word belief kind of comes from, right? The fact that it's a simple sentiment you can't get it argued against.
Yeah, you maintain a thought in the face of new data or new facts.
That's right. Yeah, belief does not have to be backed up by data or proof.
Yeah. Here we are. I have all the data in my hand, and think was said 741 times. Can you believe that we've said a word 741 times? I mean, we used the word the 2,602 times.
Hmm. It's true.
All right. The next word that I'd like to get to know better is people.
You can ask people about politics, religion, even sex.
Wow, you could be the next host of the proposal, Chris. This is great.
This is my resume. This is my reel here.
Inflections just right. Jesse Palmer.
You know what? I could be insulted by that, but I'm going to take that as a compliment. Thank you, Craig.
Yes. People are finally starting to complain on these Bachelor Facebook groups about Jesse. and how he says the exact same things the exact same way every episode. But I don't really think that's his fault. I mean, that's just how the show is structured.
It's an awkward show. Yeah. Right. But it's an awkward show. It's a horribly awkward, like, there's no good way to tell someone, okay, bye, you know, get out of here, because they don't have good methods to get rid of that. Right. I think Drew Carey's a horrible host, but at least he's doing a little bit better than Jesse Palmer. I said it.
Well, those, they're kind of apples and oranges.
Well,
The Price is Right is a formulaic show, true.
They're both formulaic. They both kind of do these, like, kind of these stooping to this kind of, it's okay, bye. You know, you compare it to Bob Barker.
Yeah.
Yeah, compare it to him. He was so natural.
Well, I think I've thought about this a lot because I used to watch The Price is Right a lot. I think that when people watch Price is Right, I think filling Bob Barker's shoes was an almost impossible task. And by going with the everyman Drew Carey, in historical preservation of houses and stuff, there's kind of this notion where if you're going to add on to a historical building, it's counterintuitive, but you don't want to just add on in the exact same style as the house. You want to add on in a way that complements the house, but is distinctly different architecture, because you don't want to imply that what you're adding on is part of the original house or building, right? Okay, this is true. That's a fact. I don't know how I know that, but I do. So with Drew Carey, it was kind of like they had to get away enough from Bob Barker that it was distinctly different, but has that sort of homey daytime charm that I think Drew Carey has, unlike most people.
See, this is a hard one for me because I don't like, for example, all the new animations that come out. You'll never see an animation now that has voice actors. You'll just see real actors doing animation.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a cheap way out, because you're going to see a movie because blah, blah, blah is the lead fish or whatever.
CK or whatever.
Yeah. And I don't care who's the lead fish. Right. Not him anymore. But and they did that with Drew Carey. They could have gotten someone from, you know, a host, you know, acting
like
school
Jesse
or something.
Palmer. Yeah.
That guy is a mini celebrity in his own right, and so I he's horrible at it, right? In a way.
Well, I think they like Drew Carey because he has experience on live shows, right? Because
it wasn't live. No, it was a sitcom.
What about
He
comes out of Whose Line Is It Anyway? Also, right?
Yes. Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking of. But correct me if I'm wrong, but the Drew Carey show was live.
No, it was a sitcom.
No, it was a sitcom, but they did it live.
Yes and no, right?
Or am I thinking of a different show?
You could always redo a scene.
No, that's what I'm saying. There's one sitcom that was live.
Oh, you know what you're
thinking? I'm pretty sure it was the Drew Carey Show.
Pretty sure you're thinking of the fact that they would always do these gimmicks for the Drew Carey Show, and one of them was that it was live one time.
Maybe it's just one episode that they did live.
One episode. They even did a 3D episode. They did a, you know, they had all kinds of, they did have groundbreaking stuff on that show. It's the first time I ever heard. I was in sixth grade and I was like, ooh, what's a transgender person or what's a cross-dressing man that likes women? That's so interesting. You know, it was a good, I think we've talked about Drew Carey before,
but
it's not a great show, but it had great things in it and interesting little gimmicks and gags they would do.
Well, I mean, if this was sports talk radio, what we're talking about right now is like hockey. Sports talk radio hosts are told not to talk about hockey because the ratings dip during that time. I think talking about Drew Carey, we're probably encountering the same thing.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Let's move on. But so they did a live. There was a sitcom that was all live. I can't think of what it was, though. But
there's a few.
And ER did a live episode. Remember that?
Right. And so did 30 Rock.
And they had the Cub game on in the background. So you really knew it was live.
Oh.
Okay, we live on the West Coast, so we don't really
know. It's not live to us no matter what.
It's like when you go to England and you actually see stuff that's older than 1700 or whatever.
We should have our East and West Coast feeds, though. That's very common.
They should have a show, should do it live from the West Coast and really screw the East Coast people. Like, if you're not willing to stay up till midnight, then you don't get to see it. You know
I would love that for the novelty of it. I wonder if what could survive.
Well, they started doing SNL. Live. They started doing SNL live. Well, okay, I guess we are, because we're halfway through Blake State here, but go ahead with the words.
All right. Well, the next two words, three and four, they're actually kind of the same words, so I'm going to do them at the same time. So the next two words that I'd like to get to know better are something and someone.
Mm.
Oh. Well, those are roughly equal, something and someone. Are we interested in things and people roughly equally?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Psychological.
We like to think about people doing
metric.
Some things and someones, yeah.
Yeah. Well, someones are doing something things all the time on this show.
Two someones are doing someone, not a third one, yeah.
Yeah, probably on this last episode. That's right. One something was doing two someones, absolutely.
Have we seen somebody turn down sex before, like Becca did with Jason? Has that happened in recent Bachelorette history?
I don't think recent, but it has happened a lot, yeah.
I mean, no guy would do that, right? I mean, I hate
a guy has done that, yeah.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yep.
They didn't sleep with the person and then break up with them?
Yeah, I mean, that's the gist of it, right? That you have to break up with one of them after the fantasy suite, so you're picking the one you, whatever, for whatever reasons, but that could be one of the reasons.
I mean, it's the nice thing to do, but I think...
There are absolute guys that I know for sure there have been at least one guy that said, I can't invite you to the fantasy suite. I remember those words.
Aww.
And I was like, whoa, fancy. Yeah, well, he has a long-term plan for his life. He doesn't want to get...
Someday I'll tell you about the time I tried to be a gentleman and neglected to go upstairs with a woman, and I'll never make that mistake again.
Neglected?
Yeah, well, I declined.
Right,
I said, I like you a lot. I don't want to, I don't want to ruin anything. And that was a big mistake. Okay, we'll get to that some other podcast. Okay, the last word, and again, this is subjective. Once you get down into the hundreds of times said, there's all kinds of words, and this is just one that stood out as a word. The fifth and final word that I'd like to get to know better is...
Full House.
Well, Full and House would be separate. They're probably, but I'm sure they're on the list somewhere. No, the word is love.
Yay! Wow.
We said it 127 times this season.
You know,
so did Ari.
We're so cold. We're so calculating. Craig, you're dying.
Hey, poor Craig.
That was like the funniest thing. Well, what was Ari's phrase that everyone always says? Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. Chris, I think you were saying something before I erupted in uncontrollable laughter.
Well, I'm just wondering if people will see how cold and calculating we are, that we say think first and love fifth. You know, our thought is way above our feelings on this podcast.
Yeah, see, this is good. This is how academia works. We get the data, we interpret the data, and then we make interpretive analysis of the data. That's the humanities. We're humanists, which I think is a dirty word now that Republicans are in charge. Take it away.
Blake State.
Yes.
I'm so excited about Blake State. No, I'm not. The only thing I was ready to say was that he's always kind of on. She wants someone to be. She needs a lot of validation, and she needs a lot of constant touch and someone to be always on her. And he's the most on her, but she still has to ask him, like, to kiss her and touch her and all this stuff. And that was really difficult for me to watch. It's very cringy. But you know, he comes off, and at the same time, despite her wanting that, he's the one who comes off as desperate.
Mm. So yeah, he does come off as a little needy.
Yeah. And you know, I know men always kind of make this argument that women only like the ones that don't fall for them or that are too cool to do that. Here's an example of a woman who's totally likes him because he's so desperate and needy. And to me, I think that argument is completely invalid. Like, I think it's just that the kinds of people that are desperate and needy are just less likable because they have other unresolved, deeper issues. But I feel like the way it gets simplified is totally off. Uh-huh. It's just the wrong approach to that issue. Go ahead, guys. Prove me wrong. Tell me I'm wrong.
Well, I was hearing what you were saying, but I was also thinking I've never heard the phrase in your head. In my head,
yes.
So many times. People that wake up with people have probably woken up when the person is kind of in their head, for lack of a better phrase. I don't even know what that means, but
what does that mean?
Quiet, I guess.
It's a Bachelor. I think it's they say it a lot on The Bachelor. I think they mean you're trying to intellectualize and be strategic too much instead of live in the moment and be spot. So I think you can tell that someone's in their head because they're quiet, and I think saying I'm in my head is a better cover than saying I just have nothing to say and my mind is blank.
Wait. Yeah,
well, there's that. I think when you have a fun night and that leads to sex, maybe for the first time, you don't want to wake up and have that person not be in a chipper mood, because it means that you think that that means they're regretting their decision.
Wait, so Chris, because you had like a definition, can you analyze this for me? Because Becca said when I was at this point with Ari and two other girls and she was talking about Lauren, she said, I was so in my head about it that I didn't even know. She had another like, you know, catch-all phrase that I didn't understand either. But does that mean she wasn't caring about Lauren, or she was oblivious? Or was she just so positive she didn't know what to think?
I've always taken the in my head to mean I'm so self-critical and I'm in such an analytical mood. And when Becca says it, she means with herself and Ari, or whoever she's relating to, that the other people become less important than her relationship, that she's analyzing too much. It's like if you're becoming overly analytical, you're in your head.
Right. So it's all three. You don't care about Lauren, you're oblivious, and you're really positive about about the
outcome.
I don't
know if it's that you're really positive. When I hear them say, is that what the sense you get? Because I get the sense that it's, they might be normal doubts. They might be doubts that have to do with growth, but it's right. A sort of anxiety and not a positivity.
Well, I'm saying positive because it's just you and that other person, and you're watching something go, but you're not worried about someone else. So in that way, it's positive because you're not concentrating on anyone else, and anything that happens is between two people. Whereas Blake is obviously not going through that. He's just always thinking about everyone else, right?
Maybe. I'm not sure I follow exactly, because yeah, I think it could mean that you're thinking about other people. I just think I'm in my head. People will say it as a negative because you're supposed to be like enacting your feelings and not thinking about your feelings. Don't think about your feelings, enact them.
Okay. Blake says it too, right? Or at least she accuses Blake of that.
I feel like everyone says, I agree. I don't know if Craig or you kind of insinuated this, but that's a phrase that is so overused that I just tune it out because such a cliche, it seems meaningless at this point.
It's so overused, but like I'm saying, I understand what you said it means, and I understand that if you said it, that's what you would mean. And I think you would use it with more context. But the way they're saying it is so spacey and out there that I don't get what they mean.
And I think it's just a bachelor keyword for something we all experience and don't like. If you're on if you're early in a relationship, you're supposed to be flirty and attentive and goofy. And especially after your first night of sex, you want the person to wake up chipper and excited to see you. And in both cases, if you're not being chipper or spontaneous or bubbly or whatever, and or you wake up not chipper-like, then I think it's totally natural to wonder what's going on. And since Becca only speaks in bachelor cliches, that's just what she says.
Yeah. And she also kind of speaks in internet cliches now, you know, because there's only two ways to really speak. Either you
went from true,
right, from getting your like source material from TV, and now you go to internet. And it's just so interesting to watch someone. It's really hard for me to defend her sometimes, because even though she makes these interesting decisions, which I think maybe there's something there, she is speaking in these. She's just as bad as Ari, or maybe that's why they liked each other, I guess.
Well, the overlap between Becca and Ari continues to grow larger. And
rich tapestry.
Yeah. She's it's funny how when put into this situation, it's kind of difficult to not follow similar patterns. And all of Bachelor Nation condemned Ari for... And they still don't like him because he made choices A, B, and C. And here we are seeing Becca doing similar things. How can you... I mean, okay, look.
It's motivation.
Ari loved two people or whatever, liked two people. And he chose one over the other and then reneged and went back to the other. Fine. But she is in love with two people. Now, Ben Higgins and Lauren, apparently Lauren, I mean, this is all through like People Magazine interviews or whatever, but apparently Lauren really could not get over the fact that Ben had said, "I love you" to JoJo. That was a big point of contention. And here Becca's like freely throwing around in love with two guys and saying that she could be falling in love with the third guy.
Oh.
How is this not causing huge consternation?
Craig, you know that that's very different. You know, when, come on, like men and women are, this is so different. Men and women are so different. You can't really, like,
so
you can't
go with this. So you're saying a man can't be in love with two people and the woman will never get over it, but a woman can say she's in love with two people and the men just get over it.
It's a lot more insulting when a man says that about two women because you think it's for different motives. And when a woman says that, I mean, here I am describing, like, picking apart their motivations when there's, like, baseline things that are just not equitable. Like, we can't compare what this person does to what this person does. Because,
are you saying Ari to Becca?
No, I'm saying basically men to women. Because we all have different motivations for doing the things we're doing. Now, Craig, okay, let's pick, you know, man X. You know that if man X went up to a woman and was like, "I've been in love with so many different women," that kind of insults a woman. I can't get to the depth of it. It's not a feminist thing. It's just what it is.
No, I get but what you're saying.
A woman says that to a man, there's a lot more nuance there because you're like, how do you mean?
Okay.
Oh, well, was it, you know, this or that? So there's a lot more like layers and gray area with women, I think. And with men, it's so base and instinctual that it's insulting in a way.
No, I know what you're saying. I totally get it. And I guess
I don't. So I'm glad
we'll
you
come back to that in just a sec. I guess just what rubs me the wrong way is there's multiple things she could say to the camera. She could say, "I'm falling in love with two guys," and maybe a third. She could say, "I love two guys." It's the in love that just that. I mean, it's like, you know, back in the day when you're younger and you said, "I hate that person," and you, that first person in your life says, you know, hate's a strong word.
And you think about
that and you're like, you know what? Saying you hate somebody actually really is kind of a strong thing to say. And it, you know, makes you kind of like think about ontology and vernacular and how words do have different levels of meaning. Love is drastically different than in love. In love is like you are in love. Your life is integrated or it's becoming integrated. You are willing to help them when they're sick. You know what I mean? That's different than love.
But here's the thing is that Ari had a different motivation for saying these things, whereas Becca seems torn, seems confused, and that's a lot more sympathetic.
Ari had motivation for saying his things?
Yeah, he wants to be a real estate mogul.
All signs are pointing towards Ari and Lauren doing well in real life. He really liked her.
They're gonna be the husband and wife team on the bus ads. We know, like,
okay. I still get caught on these things. This conversation that we come back to also, because I think even given that, which I have to take your guys' word for, I still don't understand why that's a problem or how that's an expectation that you wouldn't have of someone who's going on a nationally syndicated reality dating show.
Right. Okay.
This isn't
real people in real life.
Look, when Ari is. Sitting in front of the camera towards the end of the season and he's saying, you know, I really kind of love Lauren and Becca, I'm torn. Okay, whatever, real estate agent, yes or no, but he's in the moment and he will has genuine feelings for these people. We can't discount that. I'm just trying to compare that to Becca sitting in front of the camera in the moment towards the end of her season saying she's in love with two people. It's totally different.
Okay, wait a minute. So what I first originally said was that what's the difference is their motivation or their perceived motivation and their perceived sincerity. Now, everyone knows that Ari didn't cry. He was not a crier. He like wiped away one tear once and I forget what it was for. So that just looks bad. I'm not saying he's wrong in that. I don't even know if he was. Maybe he was super sincere. But I can see how as a mass of people and probably, you know, women ages 27 to 50 just watching the TV are going to be more sympathetic to Becca, who's distraught, crying, saying she's so confused, versus Ari, who kind of had five words total that weren't, you know, these
I totally get what you're saying.
I think that's all it is.
I would not hold any of this against Becca if it weren't for In Love. That's just it. All I'm trying to say, and I'll let it go, is that I think that is a reserved phrase, In Love, that she's throwing around pretty flippantly. That's all.
Okay.
Well, I'm getting grunts of affirmation from you guys.
I just think, Craig, you're taking it out of the context of the show. I guess if I felt she were using that in a way where I think she was trying to communicate something deeper than what the way we've already touched on how The Bachelor, the whole show, uses love and all of these different stages of love very differently than anything else.
Right.
So I just didn't pick up on that because it just sounded like the white noise of whatever they had to say, whatever stage of love they were at that's appropriate. So I don't know. That's why I don't feel too strongly about it.
Huh.
Because
that's a good point.
If someone told me they were in love with me and were insincere, then I see your point. I see that I think I might distance myself from that person because I don't think they use their words very carefully. And I think using words carefully is very important. But in the show, it seemed to fit.
Okay. Well, also, good news, we just bumped love from fifth to probably second in our data analysis here.
We're getting a little more feeling here on Bachelor Masters.
Emotive, yes.
We're analyzing.
We're on to the greasy face of Jason.
Although, you know what?
Is Becca wearing, like, some special makeup that just absorbs humidity? I mean, it's got to be awful there. It's practically raining the entire time they're in Thailand. And the guys are showing natural perspiration.
Yeah, she looks good, and maybe he's drunk.
You know, I made this Instagram post because I could finally see a good-looking person on TV, like Jason.
Jason.
I did not see him as that before. And he looks more normal, maybe more tan and less ghoulish. Like, he looked kind of...
Yeah, he's less, you know, Grandpa Munster.
Right. We called him Grandpa Munster. Yeah. But I feel like this actually happens where you decide this person's not right and it's like a moment. But I don't like that she dragged him through this ego boost where she doesn't say anything until... I think that that's kind of her MO to me. If people were looking at it a little deeper and a little bit less sympathetic towards her, the way you're saying, Craig, that people are too sympathetic and not sympathetic enough to the men. I do have respect for her that she dumped the first guy after he said all these nice things about her, let Jordan, the male model, kiss her before he dumped her. And and I think she's kind of did this to him, even though she says he's so great.
Right. Well, you can think someone's great and just don't think it's going to work out, though. But
yeah,
Chris, help me out here.
Yeah,
is there women's makeup, face makeup that I don't know has like titanium in it or something like antiperspirant? She's not shedding a single drop in probably what's 99% humidity in Thailand.
You're asking the wrong person about that, but you're right. I can confirm. I'm looking very closely. She has no sweat on her face, and she does seem very collected. I will say he seems like he's emoting a lot in this scene, and I thought it was a 5 out of 10, which was pretty good for how compelling a dramatic scene it was for The Bachelor.
Didn't he kind of turn into Wills, like mumbling, half open eyes?
But I think maybe because
the human
Wills didn't have any contrast in his behavior, and because we've seen how articulate and kind of bright-eyed he is normally, I think that's what made it more interesting, that it's like, wow, he, I think, is feeling something because he's talking so slowly and he's obviously struggling with his words.
Yeah,
I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah,
I don't know, if I was in that heat, I'd probably slur and...
Oh, God, yeah, I'd want to get out of there right away. I'd think, just dump me now so I can get back inside.
Exactly. I wonder if they have, like... If
you guys, yeah, I love that heat.
Sometimes when you go on business trips, most people, I think, they'll fly into a meeting and then they'll fly right out of a meeting or something, right? Yeah. And I like to stick around, so I'll just tell whoever's buying the ticket, like, you know, just push it off a few days and I'll take care of my own lodging or whatever. So I can putz around that place. I wonder if you could do the same thing here, where you can say, yes, ABC, I'm flying back to the States, but can I fly back next Friday?
And then, well, that's what he did.
Because really?
He stayed up. He normally would leave now.
Well, he comes back, right. But I'm just talking generally. Can he just go take a two-week vacation in Thailand and hike around the South Pacific or something?
No, but I'm pretty sure a senior corporate banker does not have to worry. You know, she keeps saying, like, I wish there were more of him. I'm like, I don't.
There's plenty of senior corporate bankers.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So maybe he just buys his own private jet club back to LA or whatever.
Yeah.
Colorado.
Back to Buffalo.
Buffalo, like, right. Yes. No ranch.
Humanizing him.
Yes. Does he live in Buffalo or is he just from Buffalo?
I don't. Yeah. I wondered if he was trying to get Buffalo cred while living elsewhere where he can do his senior corporate banking, because maybe there's a lot of corporate banking in Buffalo, but I don't think of it as that kind of city.
What kind of industry goes on? Like, who lives there?
You know, Buffalo, I don't want to talk out of turn in case I get it wrong, but upstate New York cities in general have been pretty like depressed, especially after the 2000s, I would say. Mm.
Okay.
Well, you know, yeah. Like all those upstate, it was they were all the industry that would go downriver to New York City, right?
Right. So it's like, no, it is working class, or it was at one time working class.
Part of the Rust Belt. So
20 years ago,
it is iron. Oh yeah.
Because there's the Erie Canal was the major commercial that. So back in like the 19th century, it was a really booming place, but after that was not so booming. In Rochester, there was Xerox and Kodak for a while, and after those went belly up, things started to take a turn.
Well, right, I'm not an idiot. I can Google. I mean, I don't mean this like to you guys. I mean, I'm saying this not because I'm an idiot, but because I want to know what the like right now thing is from a native's perspective. But if there is nothing there, then he can't live there.
There's banks everywhere. I mean. Oh, yeah, you go to Omaha, Nebraska.
Senior corporate banker means he's corporations.
Other companies, yeah.
Right, which means that he has to be centrally located where banks are in New York.
No,
no.
No, look, if you're in Omaha, Nebraska, which is a big banking center because they handle all the accounts for all the farms and all the industry around the farms, and there's lots of tall buildings in Omaha. It's actually kind of a neat little downtown. Those would be corporate bankers because they're handling accounts for the the East Nebraska Farming Cooperative Corporation or something, you know. We think corporate colloquially, we think giant corporations like Apple, but of course anything is a corporation that if you incorporate.
Right, right. No, well, I was just thinking just the way he slicks back his hair and the clothes he picks out.
Well, I've encountered people like that all over. I don't think it means you live in New York. I think it means you're a banker, but you could be a banker anywhere and slick back your hair.
You know, on this episode, it struck me that he usually looks the way they portray Eric Trump on Saturday Night Live.
That's exactly what Mark said. He was like, what, is a Trump on here? Like, and I was like, you know, he's a good guy. I was trying to defend him when I don't really know if he's a good guy. I felt bad for him.
Like I said last podcast, if he just got rid of the slick back hair and had it fall naturally, I think it'd look really good.
No, but a widow's peak has that kind of like, it has a cowlick that makes you...
There's ways to style that looks like you're not using product, but you are, in order to manage that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Can we go back to Blake for 1 second? Because we didn't get to talk about him. Are you guys...
Isn't Blake coming up?
No, Blake's over.
We've missed Blake? Was I...
Yeah. Well, we talked about him a little bit.
Was that during the data analysis?
Yeah.
No, was the one that that was in his head when he woke up.
Yeah,
we were talking about
Blake. I'm thinking Garrett. Garrett's still to come.
Yeah,
yeah.
Blake. There's something with Blake's head. Yeah. He's in his head. Because he keeps getting more and more, like, fidgety.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, is he have serious emotional issues with someone leaving him? Because the way, when Becca leaves, it just seems so misplaced. No one is dying or getting tortured. And I just think he has this unresolved mother issue. Like, he felt when his mom left his dad that he said to himself, I'm never going to treat a woman that way. And he just feels so deeply that he can't lose. It's a little, I don't know, dramatic for a guy.
Yeah, I mean, the rose pricks are all over him. They think he's really losing it. I didn't think that until this episode. I think he's reacting oddly. Chris, you're a good judge of character.
How many weeks ago was it that he had the freak out that there were still enough people to notice and they all said in their interviews? Was that like two or three weeks ago? Three or four?
Maybe. Two, but yeah. Two and four.
He definitely seems needy and there's something overly emotional about it. But I don't know if that has... there are always so many factors in this show that I can never tell exactly where it's coming from. Because I know, for example, my personality type is, if I were dating in my normal life, maybe someone like Becca and things didn't work out and we broke up, that I think I could handle that pretty well. But if I was on a TV show, even if it weren't a dating show that is asking you to show a lot of big emotions all the time, having lots of people and lots of things around me all the time would wear me down so quickly. So I don't know if he's getting stressed out because they've been producing a show for 2.5 months or what.
Right.
But he seems to be reacting badly. I'd agree with that.
I think we already said that he acts like he got bit by a zombie and just can't tell anyone. And he's just hiding it.
That's funny.
Because he just keeps doing this kind of head down, arms in, like looking at himself, weird hiding thing. And I can't, you know, he seems to regress to childhood self-soothing acts.
I think
that's the way it looks to me.
I think just as viewers, we're just uncomfortable watching somebody who we think should be full of self-confidence not have self-confidence. The guy's good looking, has great hair, he's ripped.
Great hair.
Seems intelligent, but he has a body and a look that I think a lot of people would like, right? And if you had that, you would look in the mirror and say, I have lots of self-confidence. And when we don't see that, it's uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, well, if you're emotionally stunted, it doesn't matter what you look like. That's what it sounds like he is. I don't know if he is. But something that came up last week a lot and seemed to have kind of come up right now was that all the parents said something, and especially Blake's mom said, I'm sure you don't want to see your kids fall in love and then fail, and then it can let them crush them and stuff like that. And I don't care. I hope that my kid goes through some heartbreak, maybe not like till she's 50, but I think that will make her really resilient. And that to me was the most.
I agree.
I couldn't stand those comments. It came from every family. I think it goes
back to a little bit what Chris was saying, which is the context puts people into saying odd things.
But they all said it. And they all were, it was like a script. It was like they were supposed to say that. It wasn't like nervous talking.
While they were swilling their red wine, the same red wine they all had in the same glass.
The Trader Joe's 2-buck chuck that they brought over. The answer is either A, this is how a lot of Americans think about their kids and we think that could be unhealthy. Or
absolutely.
B, they kind of think it and then they're uncomfortable and nervous so they say it anyway. Or C, somehow this bachelorette template makes people say things they don't think.
I think the third is the most likely, because one thing that I've noticed just in a few seasons of Bachelor and Bachelorette is that sameness when you get to hometowns is apparent, but so is the kind of polish. So that makes me think there's got to be a producing kind of template that people really help the families navigate.
Right.
Because if you see documentary footage of normal, quote, like random normal Americans, even if they have kids that are, whatever, attractive and, I don't know what word, successful enough to be on a reality show, you're going to get a lot of a wider cross-section of less articulate, more awkward people than are always presented in all of these. Uh-huh. So I think they're hyper-produced. And I think they'll sit down and say, like, okay, what do you want to say about your kid in your own words? They say something kind of inarticulate, and they're like, great, say this. And so it'll come across, like, you don't want to seem unsupportive. So say you want your kid to find love and not have heartbreak. That's kind of some sort of more, I think that's an oversimplified version, but I think that's how you get a lot of these same sound bites, because there's no way you would have so many different things in a documentary setting, so many different people say something in a coherent sentence like that so kind of perfectly. Yeah. There's no way.
Well, here's the only reason I would totally agree with you, and the fact that it's a very cookie cutter experience, except that they all had two families I can think of had this deep story, and that's Garrett and Blake's, about what happened when their child was broken by heartbreak. Blake's mom said that she had to have dinner with him every day, and Garrett's mom said that he was crying leaving the house of where he lived. And those stories just did seem, maybe just for those two families at least, that they are trying to protect to death, you know, into their kids past college, past any kind of, you know, at 25, you can let go of your kid's love life.
Right. And I guess just what I question is, I think maybe it's not the details, but the presentation that I think the network has some idea that America on the whole thinks that that's sympathetic. So we're going to mold those details into you saying something that conveys this.
I mean,
and people will accept that.
Right.
Police can get confessions out of people that didn't murder someone. The producers can easily get these parents to say things that look good when they cut it all together.
Right, exactly. But the depth of that is that they both are still very invested, interested, guiding in their kids' love life way past a good age to do that. And that's
or at
why
least that we see on the
like,
show.
I think we're oversaturated with that this season for sure. All three.
Okay.
Like Ari's parents couldn't care less. In fact, the mom was on Quaaludes or something.
Though.
They're European.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's a moot point. I think that's actually where I was going.
If I could do a Dutch accent, his dad is
more of a celebrity and more famous than he doesn't need. I don't think he's intimidated by a network or cares really about how he's depicted, right? Because he has his. Whereas some of these families, I think they're like, wow, we can't mess up being on TV.
Yeah, no, I mean, then it's a bad comparison but I do think that they are honestly European and are like, oh, you're in, you know, the mom barely spoke English, if you guys remember.
Yeah. But this
the
is
mom
why,
could barely
still
speak
why
English because she was loaded on Quaaludes.
Okay.
To say the obvious again, apparently it's obvious, but this is why Dean's does stand out as being one of the best, because they couldn't produce. I feel like it starts out
the
being
dad had
produced,
no idea what was going on. Indeed.
But I gotta go back
then
and
they
watch
couldn't
that.
Produce that insanity. Oh, it's like a mess of dysfunction, but in the best way, where the dad checks out at a certain point. He won't say, obviously, what the TV station wants him to say. He walks away. He doesn't finish sentences. He walks away. I think it's so good. And you can see how much it affects Dean. He, like, sleeps on the floor, doesn't he?
Well, Dean, now that I mention it, Dean was probably getting extra frustrated because he wasn't following the gilded template of how a parent should act. Like, the producers are probably pulling Dean aside and saying, dude, your dad won't answer these questions. Can you talk to him or something?
Because essentially they just fight also, right? He says, like, I don't support you. You know, see ya. Bye. Get out of my life.
Here, have a pillow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think we're all sort of on the same page here. There's a lot that goes on when they produce these segments with the parents. That said, as you said, EZR, it's noteworthy that the parents are all sort of saying this overprotecting kind of thing about their kid's love life at a certain age. You're right. It's like, yes, you want to be interested. Yeah, sure, call your parents all the time and let them know what's going on. But to say, I don't want my kid ever to be broken up with again is a very odd thing to say.
Well, yeah, and that kind of goes into one thing that I kept hearing from her top two, right, Garrett and Blake, is that they both kind of said something very similar that I don't know if anyone really caught it because it was so strange. that getting, you know, falling in love and getting married, they kind of want to get that over with and get settled. They're both kind of just done and are so, you know, we've talked about the 5-month girl, and she's definitely just has the, maybe she just attracts those kinds of people, and she is that kind of person. Well, it just comes from all sides.
I've known some people that maybe they're all from the Midwest. I'm trying to think of my catalog of people I know, and they're all from the Chicago area, that, you know, we were in our early 20s, and then at some point they said, okay, started dating somebody, and then they got married. It was like, yeah, I want to settle down and have kids now. It was like,
yeah,
it was like a decision. They were ready, and this is what they want to do. And they're all, well, not, there's maybe 2 or 3 people I know that like that, and they're all happily married and have kids according to their Facebook. So maybe that's more common than you think.
Well, I was visiting my brother this weekend. We were having a conversation kind of like this. We were talking, at least from where we stand. Now, we both live in California. We come from upstate New York. My brother's fiance is from upstate New York. And we were noticing a generational difference where for like our parents' generation, marriage signified the start of adulthood, where we all seem to agree that marriage was more, if you chose to get married at all, was more like, could be a culmination. So people got married later. And I think that relates to this, because we've noted The Bachelor is kind of an old-fashioned, it's these morals that are a little old-fashioned in 2018. So them saying, I want to get marriage over with, I could see that, because it's this old-fashioned kind of notion that it's like, well, adulthood really starts
right
when I get married, and then I'm an adult.
Yeah.
Not, I can be an adult without that. I think they see that as like this missing part of, I'm not a complete person until I'm married.
Yeah, that's totally true. And I think EZR, I can kind of say as a blanket statement that the 3 of us Bachelor Masters are probably on the further edge of following our family traditions than a lot of Americans.
I think most Americans are like us, but yeah.
Well, like I'm not so sure about that. I think there's lots of people that spend a lot of time at home. They live near home. They want to reproduce what their parents did.
Right.
And therefore, you know, they see marriage as starting as opposed to culminating, to use Chris's.
Well, I just know a lot of people that fit into exactly what you said, Craig. But I think the overall stats of America are people like us.
Well, I think the stats would be more they get married and then they get divorced and then they realize that marriage should be a culmination, not a beginning.
Yeah. Well, both these guys are really dressing it up great, because they both kind of say something like, falling in love is great, whatever, but staying in love, now that's the like ticket. You know, they're both very, they do a good job of saying, I just want to settle down, get this over with. You know, they have
5-month girl thing.
Yeah, they have that kind of, it's a sweet thing, especially Blake. You know, he must have, I mean, Garrett got divorced, but Blake must have been like fallen in a ditch somewhere, because he is, feels dead.
He's 29. I couldn't believe that. He's one that I thought was a lot younger. Maybe it's because of the way he acts, but his little Chiron said he was 29, and that surprised me. Mm-hmm. Garrett seems older to me.
Yeah. Well, we're looking at their waking up now, Garrett and Becca. I tweeted this from @BachelorMasters during the show, but I'm not a big camper, like, which is to say I don't like camping. But I love this. It's a tent underneath a roof. That I could do.
Like, take out the peril of nature, and I could do camping.
You are camping, but you're basically inside. Although, you know, it doesn't have windows. I mean, this is exactly what I would like to go out.
Yeah, you wouldn't have white sheets camping. This is not camping.
I wouldn't have white sheets, period. But, I mean,
yeah, don't have white sheets.
It's like kids camping in their yards, their parents' yard. Like, they go out back and pitch a tent.
One thing I really liked about this, I noticed, is that whatever shirt she's wearing, it's like a thin, I think it's like a thin one-piece kind of romper thing. She's wearing it in bed here in the morning, but she's also wearing it during her, you know, interviews with the camera. That can mean a lot of different things. I thought it was an interesting observation.
Another thing we kind of, oh yeah, look, there it is. Like you said, Craig. It's a tent indoors. Yeah, because it probably rains all the time.
Isn't that awesome? And so you can go out of your tent and have breakfast on the little table and still be under the roof.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, nice for them.
Literally. Inside, it's like on a deck even.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Remember, well, this might be a little bit of a change subject, but remember on Lauren and Ari's date where they went to some church? I don't remember where. Right.
Yeah.
And then this time, Blake and Becca did this same religious type thing right before they had sex. Now, is this a way that the American Broadcasting Corporation balances the fact that they're going to have euphemisms for
probably
sex, or, you know, at least covert sex things happening? Because if I was a 10-year-old, I would not know that sex happened.
No, there's lots of coded messages. Like South Park did that a long time ago with Disney, where Mickey Mouse was the executive producer of the Jonas Brothers. You know, Kyle and Stan and whatever were like wondering why the Jonas Brothers were telling everyone at their concerts to not have sex till they're married. And then they meet up with Mickey Mouse, who explains that it's all like it's how you sell sex, is by pretending that there isn't sex and sending these coded messages.
Brilliant.
This is what you're talking about, Ethan.
it's
a coded way to trick people who think that sex on TV is bad into not thinking that there's sex on TV, even though there is. It's all coded messages.
No, well, I'm saying it. I know it's, we know it's coded, but I'm saying that there's a balance during these Fantasy Suite episodes where they try to do the religious thing.
Totally figured out.
Yeah.
Like they've spent millions figuring that out.
But this is a ridiculous balance. It's so, they go to a temple, they go to a Catholic church, I think they went to.
Right.
It's not even a balance. It's just two things that are polar opposites there in front of you.
Right.
There's no...
Well, in some religions, you know, sex isn't this horrible thing that the Catholics made it out to be, you know, all those centuries ago.
But as an American watching TV, that's what you're supposed to get, a good balance. You're supposed to think she's going in there wholesome, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is why the sheets are white.
Yes.
Yes.
There's a lot of,
There's
a lot of good allegories and... Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing I'm not trying to I hope I'm not coming across patronizing to you easier. Like, you know this. I'm just saying that there's nothing that the three of us can say that isn't common knowledge to people that study media and messages.
Right.
Like the white sheets, the religious buildings that they go to, all of that is elaborately constructed.
Are you saying, ECR, though, the balance, though, you thought it was, it just didn't, it seems like they don't go together in a natural way or something.
I guess my bigger point is that it's kind of insulting that they're trying to balance these two things or not, or they're trying to present a balance. I don't think they are balancing anything. And again, we're going to go back to this. The juxtaposition that they're trying to create is there. I'm not saying that it's not, or I'm not saying that the American public is dense when it comes to it. But then at the same time, I think we're just going to go back to Love Island, Chris, where late night television is for late night viewers.
No,
and if you
difference.
Can stay up past 10.
Europeans, Europeans
yes.
figured out how to address sex a long time ago. You can go to Europe and see a billboard with a scantily clad woman and understand what's being sold to you. Americans have no capacity for that. And so I think most Americans are dense and they don't know that these juxtapositions, they're not thinking about
it. I was trying not to say that, Craig.
But it's an absolute truth.
I agree.
Thank you, ECR.
I was trying to be nice.
I wonder how many of our Bachelor Masters podcast listeners are dense and don't listen to coded messages.
You mean
should send them messages.
Yeah, former listeners. Yeah.
Yeah, they dumped us when we were doing data analysis.
Right.
Like, can we send coded messages through, like he does on Fight Club? Like,
we've got to do subliminal messages through audio only. We've got to figure out, I heard that if you flash an image to your non-dominant eye, that's the part of the brain that will inform, your entire dominant field of vision. How it tells your brain how to interpret that. So they did an experiment where, you know, you can insert a frame faster than the Fight Club thing. Like, you would consciously recognize that you had seen something and they would flash coded, you know, positive or negative images, and then flash like a neutral face at someone and say, what's the expression on the face? And it was, you know, the people had been flashed positive images would say, oh, it's a happy face, it's a negative, it's an angry face. So, yeah, it is interesting how much the science really holds up. It really affects people. We could do that with audio.
They say the
we
more you talk about science on podcasts, the less listeners you get.
If you say it really fast and in a funny voice, though, you get
science.
Them back.
It doesn't work as much with speaking, though, right? You have to have all senses on.
But that's why I think we got to develop that. We got to pipe through one of the stereo channels, you know, imperceptible sound. Yeah, maybe like really high-pitched songs.
Yeah,
exactly.
Sergeant Pepper.
Number dog nine, whistles. Number nine. Oh, boy. Since we are looking for a segue to another topic here. So she's going to pick Garrett, right? How are they going to fix this Instagram thing? I mean, it was interesting, actually, on the Rose Pricks from a couple days ago. Ronnie Karam, co-host, he actually addressed a similar thing that I've been kind of saying, not in defense of Garrett, but pointing out that he never posted these things himself. He only followed and or liked posts on Instagram.
Have you seen what he liked? Because I just looked it up today.
It's bad. There's no question. I'm just pointing out that it is spinnable. Because if he had posted them himself, like the guy who just got fired, the director of...
James Gunn?
Yeah, he got fired for things he posted 5-6 years ago, right? Unlike that, I think, Garrett, there is room for being able to PR their way out of this. But what are they going to do? They go to Good Morning America. They go on Jimmy Kimmel. They're going to have to do all that. They're going to have to come up with something. They've been thinking about this since Becca picks Garrett in real life. So what are they going to come up with?
Isn't the bigger issue the fact that him and Becca probably won't make it because he has all these problematic beliefs?
I mean, that seems like the only real way out is if they convince Becca to break up with him so that they can announce that they broke up when the last episode airs so that they don't have to do the Good Morning America Jimmy Kimmel stuff.
I don't think this relationship, I think I've said this before, but this relationship can't last because she's not basing it on him. She's basing it on her projection of her dad on him.
Right.
So
you're saying Blake is probably the winner.
Oh, no, I'm saying Garrett's probably the winner, but I don't think it'll last.
Oh, got it.
Right. And I'm just adding on top of that, if she finds out these bad things in the time between when the show stops taping and when it airs, all it would take is a little nudge by ABC to say, okay, you know what? Break up with him now because that gets us out of this entanglement of how to spin this.
I'd rather hear an explanation from him, honestly. I'm not to guilt him, but I'd rather hear him honestly say what his mindset is or was.
Well, that's the first thing he's going to do on after the rose, right? He's going to have to explain himself.
There's no way they're going to talk about politics.
I was going to say
like that.
They have.
Are they going to bring it? Will they bring it up? Is it a big enough deal? Because haven't other people in the past been in this kind of?
They're going to bring him out by himself. They're going to dim the lights, and Chris is going to go into his, you know, serious mode, and he's going to be. You need to answer these questions, and he's going to have a
Craig
super well rehearsed. Multiple PR agent people set of paragraphs to say. He's going to have to.
I was about to bet you, except that you just said that.
Said what?
So that might happen. It might be a nuanced or even a covert, really obscure conversation about. It won't refer to any.
Twitter. That's a good point.
You mean it's like. It's like a politician's answer. It's like you say, you cover your bases without saying anything.
It's like on Bachelor in Paradise with the sexual assault allegations. They never really talked about it, even though they had that whole thing where they talked about it.
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah, it'll. They won't say the word crisis actors or.
Oh, boy. No, you're right. There's going to be a very meticulously well thought out way that they're going to address this. But they are going to do it. I'll bet you.
All the shows you had mentioned are channels where they can control the message. So even if they have to do that on GMA or Kimmel, right? It's still they're still safe there.
Yeah.
Well, in a way, Jimmy Kimmel he thinks it's ridiculous. So he does try to, you know, navigate it in like a ridiculous way unless it gets serious. And then he will lower the hammer on anybody. Kind of. It depends. But I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't think they will address anything directly, is my bet, I guess.
Well, they could
but
say,
I guess that's a wussy bet.
They could say, Jimmy Kimmel, we need you to get this all resolved in the way that you know how to do it, and he might do that. I mean, someone's going to have to. It's not going to be Good Morning America. Pfft.
No.
That is the most frustrating thing about The Bachelor, is that back 5-7 years ago when there was no really cohesive internet, not that there is now, but less cohesive, you'd have to stay and watch those shows to know what they said. And if you missed it, you missed it, you know?
Right.
So I'm kind of happy I'll just get the best of somehow.
Yeah, exactly. There was also no such thing as sex back 7 years ago.
Yes,
sex,
there was.
Sex didn't exist.
This formula's been the same.
They went into the fantasy suite and talked. That's what
the fantasy suite episode has been altered slightly, but it's honestly the same for the last 10 years. There's implied sex, and there are people that will be ashamed and say something like, well, let's just go in there and talk by ourselves and be ourselves.
Yeah, be ourselves. Yeah,
be ourselves.
Be ourselves.
Yeah.
Yep.
Naked.
Like Adam and Eve. Yes. The original sin. Okay. All right, so here we are at the final rose ceremony, which isn't really a rose ceremony because we know who's getting the rose. Although, I always like to call out who's going to get the next rose because I seem to have a knack for that.
Oh, you mean you call the order
as
well?
Yeah, I know the producers well enough to know who they're going to pick. So I was like, Garrett. And sure enough, she picks Garrett. Because they got to get that brooding, tense, is she actually going to give me a rose from Blake. Which
I'm
going to get from Garrett. So
you're just torturing the poor guy. He's already, like, tortured enough.
Finally, he has his top button unbuttoned on his collared shirt, Blake.
I love your fashion comments, Craig. So I got to hear what riles you up and also what gets in your good books.
I was going to sing the song, Craig, but I don't remember it.
What song?
Craig likes to talk about fashion.
Oh,
I don't know.
Yeah, we recorded all these songs that we couldn't figure out how to play on air. What was that ping? It sounds like you're on one of those tetherball courts, and when the ball spins around and hits the pole.
Me?
I don't know. Ping.
No, it was
me. Somewhere.
It was I'm inside, but it was something that hit our bedpost, our metal bedpost.
Oh, okay. You have a tetherball pole in your.
Those are awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's like the end of Napoleon Dynamite. That really gave tetherball legitimacy.
Mm. Yeah, that's what did it. Blake and Garrett, I like how they kind of hate each other on a level, but then they're very, you know, the guy.
Yeah, they get along, though, right?
They get along. Yeah, it seems like they get along, but they have these death stares to each other, too, or these innuendos of, you know, oh, I hate that she's in love with someone else. And then they let it, you know, they don't say the person's name or anything.
No, I was thinking about that, too. I mean, all the fighting and throwing picture frames in pools that happens earlier is great and all. But as we get smaller and smaller, I have less interest in them fighting. And it's kind of nice that they just kind of get along. Because remember, was it Nick and
they got into a huge fight. Nick and
it was over Caitlin. Oh, the guy
Sean.
She ended up picking. Sean. They almost went to fisticuffs at one point, right?
Yeah. Because he had sex with her before the fantasy suites.
Right, yeah.
That's
hard to top. No pun intended. Mm. Remember when you're a kid and you go to grab a ball from a bin and then you realize it's a tether ball and it has that stupid little hook on it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's always a letdown. All right, so they're drinking champagne. We are not going to Minnesota. I guess they're flying the mom out. They're going to the Maldives?
Yeah, they always do that. They fly the family. Well, not always. They haven't always done that. But
they go back to someone's hometown, don't they? The bachelor, bachelorette, don't they go back to their hometown?
They normally, on the second to last episode, like second to last pre-recorded episode, they will fly the family out.
Oh.
That's a new normal, but it's a normal now.
In this new normal, we never go to the bachelor, bachelorette's hometown?
No.
Oh.
Uh-uh. Wow, that makes your comment a few episodes ago, Craig, that she didn't even bring her own friends to that one date.
Right.
Ring me, because I thought the same thing. I thought, oh, she didn't bring her friends because later we'll be in her hometown and she'll show off her friends. She never showed off her friends.
Yeah, that's weird.
Wow.
All her friends. What are you talking about? She's had her friends in like four episodes.
Well, yeah, all her friends are bachelorette.
Who are they?
They're the bachelorette.
Yeah.
Oh, her TV friends.
Yeah.
I think those are her only friends, Chris.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I feel sad. I feel sad again.
Becca M., also known as Bika to us, she, I think, has a healthy mix because on her Instagram stories, they'll be like some, yeah, I'm hanging out with all my former Bachelor contestant friend, family friend, you know, friend, they call them family or whatever. But then there's lots of stories of her just hanging out with people in LA that she knows that have no connection to the show. But I think Becca, this Becca, I think the argument could be made that her only friends are former Bachelor contestants.
I think, well, that is the only argument.
Fair enough. I shouldn't be too hard on her.
And those apple pickings she did. Those are...
Well, you should be hard on her, Chris. I mean, isn't that weird to not have friends outside of the show?
Yeah, but I'm thinking of myself. Would I be able to line up a lot of friends? Probably not. So, fair enough, Becca.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to convince three people to show up at a bar to meet someone. That's true.
I would ask you guys. I wouldn't even have anyone to go with.
It's hard enough to find someone to play golf with me.
Right. No, I have a 45-year-old godmother to my kid, and she'd be like, I don't want to go there. Well, that's the only people I know.
Well, you all right, have so we two all friends.
Unified there.
Bachelor, yeah. Masters.
There we go. So our listeners, you can feel a little closer to all of us if you feel that same way. We're all in this together. And Becca, we've been mean throughout the season. We reach out on that one thing, but get some real friends, Becca. Come on.
If you are in Omaha and you need three friends to show up to a bar, it's only $500 round trip from LA. That's $1,500. We will come and we'll even record an episode there.
How amazing would that be if we had Omaha? One person?
Yeah.
Well, I was talking about Omaha earlier.
Well, I think her new best friends are her ex-almost fiancés now. Because she keeps saying she wants to keep them all in her life forever. Yeah. Jason and she wants them... Friends. Yeah, and she wants everyone to pile on and to, like, come run to me, guys. We're having so much fun here. Isn't this fun? It's just so, like, you're trying to be that cool teacher and you just can't make it there.
Yes.
But I'll be her friend, I guess.
Yeah, if she reaches out and wants to do a live episode... That's going to be great for everyone. New friends for her. A few more listeners for us, surely.
This is why we don't have any friends, Chris, because we use people.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Well, on that note, thanks for listening. If you made it this far, you made it through a lot of science and data analysis and love versus in love. It's great.
Hockey talk.
Yeah, hockey. Yeah, we mentioned the word hockey. That's going to be horrible for our podcast rating. Twitter at Bachelor Masters. EZR runs our Instagram. That's The Bachelor Masters. And we always have our Facebook hanging out. Come find us. And we will see you next time.
Sweet. Bye.
Bye.